Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's that time of the week again for the Chelsea Fan Show. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stamford Chidge, Jonathan Kidd.
Right.
And I am delighted to say we are joined this week by the man, the Chelsea legend, Kerry Dixon. How are you, Kerry?
I'm very well, thank you.
Great to have you on. Stamford Chidge, great to have you on. Yeah, great to have you back.
Lovely to have Kerry back, the founder of and the inspiration for the Chelsea Fancast, Mr. Kerry Dixon.
Again. Great.
Lovely, isn't it, mate? Lovely to see him. He's looking well. Looking very well, mate.
Thank you very much. You did mention you spent £500 on some new glasses and things like that.
Yeah. But that was before I said that. Good to see you, mate.
Fellas, we have got all sorts coming up.
It's been a busy show.
Very busy week for Chelsea, of course. Hasn't it? Now, we'll get on to the opening game of the season at Old Trafford.
Do we have to?
In the next segment of the show. Well, that's why I'm going to give you an hour to chill out, to calm down, to not worry about it. But first, I guess the immediate reaction from the Super Cup earlier this week, an absolutely corking fixture, I have to say. I mean, there was a lot of chat in the lead-up to the game. Does the Super Cup really count? Does it really matter?
I think it did for me, mate.
Well, I think it showed.
Yeah, it was a good match, wasn't it, actually? You know, taking the blue-tinted glasses off for a second, I thought it was really, you know, really entertaining match, and I enjoyed it.
Other than perhaps the extra time, everybody looked a bit exhausted.
They did, actually. That took something away from it. You know, I don't like seeing players going down with cramp.
Yeah.
Although what I want to know is how, you know, what Lazarus-like...
qualities.
I mean, I couldn't believe that they let Firmino take a penalty. It was Matip, wasn't it? One of them had gone down. With the worst case of cramp I'd ever seen, and he took a penalty. And I was thinking at the time, whatever you do, don't bring Emerson on to take a penalty, because he had a serious problem. Mind you, his penalty was superb, as were they all, apart from poor old Tammy.
And the goalkeeper was about a foot off the line. What happened to VAR?
Yeah, but I mean, you know...
No, Chidge, I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, but no.
he's got a hump about it.
I'm sorry.
I'm with you, Mr. Kidd. I'm with you on this one.
Yeah. Absolutely ridiculous.
I mean,
they bottled it completely. They thought, oh my God, everybody's celebrating so much. They've all run the length of the pitch. They're all mobbing everybody. We'd better just let that go.
This is the problem. Yeah. And I said this, and we don't want to make this show about VAR, this is the problem. It's like when Sergio Aguero scored the winner to give Manchester City their first ever Premier League title. You're going to pull that back? There'll be riots. Yeah. There's no way you can. But you're right, he was off his line. My issue with it is that you don't need a video assistant to tell that he's off his line. That's why the assistant referee is standing there to do that job.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't do it.
Listen, more to the point, because we've got here Chelsea's...
Yes.
I mean, arguably Chelsea's best ever striker. Yes. Bobby might have a word about that. Yes. But what does it... Give us an insider's information on what Tammy Abraham might be going through having missed that penalty. How's he going to feel? And can he bounce back?
Yeah, of course. And I'm with them too, by the way, on VAR. So
yeah, no, I hate
good
it too,
stuff, Kerry.
Yeah, I think it's warranted in certain cases, but people like us, the journalists, and all of everyone else, I'm afraid, who want football to be talked about and argued about, for the various reasons that they're doing it, VAR will satisfy everyone. Mm. But there you go, Tammy Abraham. Hope he makes it. Want him to make it. He'll be feeling desperate that it was his penalty. Mm. He'll let that go. He's a youngster. He'll look forward to the next game. I don't really know what his mentality is like, I've got to be honest. I don't know him as a person. Haven't yet, you know, got to meet him. I dare say I will. And I hope I will. Wish him all the best and, you know, hope he has a wonderful career. And I hope it's at Chelsea, which is the most important thing. And that's going to be determined by the fact that what he does on the football field. I've mentioned time and time again to you, Dave, that, you know, they've got to hit the ground running, these kids. But the ones who... going to start this year, they've got a better than average chance and a better chance than many of the promising youth products we've had before, because we can't buy anyone else. What we've got within the squad is going to be within the squad. You look at the two at the back, Christensen and Tomori and, you know, Zuma. They've only got Rudiger now, really, as a experienced, if you like, defender. The other two are experienced at certain levels and doing certain things, but they're still regarded as kids and at Chelsea. But they're going to get game time. and so is Mason Mount, based on what Frank is saying. And Tammy Abraham, Batshuayi's only young as well, by the way. So they're going to get game time this season. But the thing is, they're not going to get game time because they're young. They're going to get game time and they're going to have to do something while they're on the field. And Tammy is going to want to score goals, and that's what he's got to do.
He seems to get into very good positions, Tammy. We talked about this last week. I was impressed. Did you not think that he seems to get there? Just it's the finishing, it's the end product that doesn't seem to be working at the moment for him.
He's got a good CV as regards product and, you know,
in the championship.
No, throughout his career. You look at as a youngster, he's always scored goals.
Right.
And that's what I always look at. Sure. You know, no disrespect to, we mentioned earlier off air about Mark Hughes, great player, great, but had a CV that was not full of goals. But he got spectacular goals, but he didn't get enough of them. Tammy Abraham gets his 20-25 goals at the levels he's played at. Whether he can do it now at the Premier League, at one of the top clubs in Europe, even in the world, that's his new challenge. I think he, and I hope he comes through.
He's after mobile players, Frank, according to what he said today, because he said that Batshuayi wasn't fit enough in the press conference.
Well, Tammy will get a chance, although having said that, Giroud didn't do himself any harm in the week.
No, he played very well, actually.
He was much better than I've seen him play.
But I'm a big, you know, I like Olly Giroud, and I felt, we'll talk about United later on, actually, but I felt that Frank would start with Giroud against United because you just need a bit of experience. You needed somebody to hold the ball up, and I think that's what Giroud does. But he put that goal away against Liverpool really well. That was a quality goal, finish.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, reminded me of a certain striker, Chelsea. Do you know what?
Well, I'd like to think I was a little bit quicker than him.
Oh, mate. I've seen oil tankers turn quicker than Olly Giroud, mate. But the funny thing is, I was watching, bizarre, completely tangential thing, but I happened to be watching the 88-89 DVD of Chelsea's season.
You just happened to be watching. I knew I was interviewing him.
But I saw you score a goal, actually, almost the spit of Olly Giroud's goal. And I know you were much quicker than him, but it was the finish. It was a striker's goal.
That was a tongue-in-cheek remark. You know, he has qualities that I haven't. And someone like that. He's a good player, and I like him as well. Mm. And, you know, for the older, established international player, he's going to state a case for more game time himself this year. Mm, he hasn't played an awful lot for Chelsea, and he would think he's been underused for the time
he's been
here.
Unfairly, I would say.
Well, his record is, well, I mean, it's 12-16 in Europe.
Yeah.
7.
Record-breaking.
In 49 domestically. Yeah. That's the difference. He's scoring for fun in the Europa
League. But he got played in the Europa League. Sorry,
Gary. I was just going to say, just on the question, 7-49, he might have come on for 10 minutes in about 30 of them.
Yeah.
You know, if you put actual minutes down, my guess is it's probably not about 10 games.
I did think the bizarre choosing of Higuain over him towards the end of the season was just absolutely ridiculous.
Absolutely nuts, wasn't
ridiculous.
It?
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you on that one as well.
Yeah, thumbs up was working well, but perhaps not on the radio, but thank you.
you cheeky monkey.
I didn't know if there's a podcast or anything else, but if anyone wants to hear or wants to listen, the thumbs up was given when he made that statement.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I need that.
For those of you listening in black and white, it was a thumbs up.
Yeah.
But to finish on Tammy, I think it just goes to show. I mean, you mentioned his movement there, kiddo. The fact that he is getting into positions, not so much against United, he had a couple of chances when he perhaps should have anticipated the ball coming across.
Yes, he
did get into the position inside the 6-yard box when Pedro crossed against Chelsea and didn't put it away.
Yep, there is that. But, you know, people are going to analyse every chance, everything. Yeah. Something you might see return to the game with Tammy Abraham if he establishes himself up front is when high pressing, which is the feature of, it appears, every European coach and every coach that wants to be a coach at any level, all their teams with high press, a Tammy Abraham, and an on-form Tammy Abraham, would give a defender like a David Luiz the opportunity to push the ball, knock it over the top. Yeah. He could give someone 2 yards, some of these defenders. They're not going to live with him. He's very, very quick.
Mm.
And listen, you had a decent midfield player, he could slot the ball up alongside. Some of these centre-backs, they're not all blessed with pace.
No.
And you might see a situation whereby in a game that is keep the ball to feet and everything else, you might see a situation where we've got a quick centre forward, you know, leave the ball in the space and Tammy will get there and he'll score goals because of it.
Mm. And as you said, he's scored goals whatever level he's played at. So I just think he needs to get off the mark, and I think once he gets off the mark, he'll be away. And the other thing is, Kerry, I think, and I know you don't like me talking about systems, but I think that I think Frank would rather play him than Giroud because of that pace, because of the fact that he's quick and he can. He's in off the. My God, that, we got right. So, hang on a minute. What's going on?
Thumbs up to the right and thumbs up to the left now.
12 minutes gone and we've had two thumbs up from Kerry. That's better than usual, isn't
Brilliant.
It?
But great, yeah, great start to the show.
You know, he's an off the shoulder type of player because he's got a lot of pace.
Yeah, yes. And that's what got him a lot of his goals.
Isn't he, at the moment?
Well, I think, you know, if nothing else, pace is going to give you something. It's an asset that no one can deal with.
Yeah.
It's a raw asset. You know, it's not about how you play the ball, what you do. If you're quicker than someone, you can dress it up how you like, but you're going to win the race.
Yeah, definitely.
And ultimately, look, we're talking about fine margins. Yes, it was quite large last weekend against United, 4-0. But this Chelsea side have taken a Liverpool side, who we're being told are one of the best that we've ever seen in the Premier League,
Take that down a notch and you know why.
I don't know who's telling you as well.
Yeah, well, exactly.
The red biased media, I think. The red-tinted media are telling us that. But anyway, go on. Nevertheless,
they are European champions. Let's put things in perspective.
They are European champions after finishing fourth, which is another matter altogether. But you are taking a Liverpool side here right to the wire. And had it not been for, you know, a couple of Kepa saves, personally, I think he probably should have made. He made some great saves in the game, the double save from Salah and Virgil van Dijk in particular.
Unbelievable save.
But Montgomery, Sunderland, 1973.
Really? Jim Montgomery.
I am with you on that, kiddo, but I kind of feel like whenever a double save happens in any game, everyone goes, it's just Jim Montgomery.
Yeah, no, the fact he went onto the bar as well.
That was the
distinct comparison.
Nice.
Peter Lorimer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Peter Lorimer.
Yeah.
And Trevor Cherry.
Yeah, well remembered.
How about that?
That's even better. Yeah.
I can't remember what I did yesterday.
No.
But I can remember that.
Or who
that,
you
really.
Are.
Or who am I? In fact, yeah.
Who are
but
you?
Ultimately, this is promising, right? It's promising. It's positive after all the negativity and the hashtag Lampard out nonsense that we saw again on Twitter. I know it's a minority, but it's beyond
There's
funny.
Nobody,
now. It's beyond
Matt,
funny.
Matt, I can guarantee you, and actually to segue this into the awful racist comments about Tammy Abraham, I can guarantee you that nobody who goes to Stamford Bridge week in, week out will be using a Lampard out hashtag on Twitter as much as nobody who will wander into Stamford Bridge on Sunday would have been racially abusing Tammy for missing that penalty. I'm afraid it's all part of this awful phenomenon of social media where keyboard warriors who want to get attention say awful things in full knowledge that they never get any punishment for it because it's on social media.
Absolutely agree.
Brilliant. Well said. Absolutely right. And we all agree with that.
Yeah. And Chelsea have labelled it disgusting, abhorrent.
Well,
so
they have
Frank
to
Lampard.
Come out and say stuff. Yeah, and I don't
so
blame
Frank Lampard. And he's going to work with Tammy Abraham, obviously, to fix this and help make sure that his mindset is correct.
Frank missed bigger penalties than Tammy has.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what he said to him. And I think Frank will manage him very well in that context.
Yeah.
And I think because Frank played at the highest level, I think he understands players better than a lot of other managers he perhaps never managed at the highest level, mentioning no names.
Absolutely. Well, promising signs, of course. Next, we're going to discuss a bit more about N'Golo Kante coming back into that starting lineup.
Love him.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Jonathan Kidd, Stamford Chidge. We are joined. Do you know that he does this after every time his name's called, Kerry? He says kiddo. Just an FYI, in case you think he's got some sort of weird outrage sort of burst thing going on there. I'm Matt Beadle. We're with you through till 9 o'clock this evening, a 2-hour special, and we are currently reflecting on the Super Cup final defeat to Liverpool, but it was a good performance, and N'Golo Kante was back in that midfield.
Can I just say it's Kante?
Well, there's debate around this, isn't it?
No.
Sorry?
Kante.
Kante.
Yeah.
Kante.
It's French.
Yeah, which would mean Conte, no?
No,
Conte. Conte.
Conte.
I'm saying Conte.
Mate, this guy gets paid lots of money to do voiceovers. He's a linguist. Don't argue with him.
Okay, so go on. Just
say it again. It's not Conte.
Right.
It's Conte. It's a different... It's like Tour and Tour. There's a slight difference in the...
So say his name for me, kiddo.
Conte.
N'Golo Kante.
Yeah.
Right. Well, N'Golo can play very well in that.
Very good, man.
Midfield.
Good recovery. Yeah. Good recovery. A bit like Kante, really.
There you go.
Sorry, Conte.
No, Conte. Yeah.
But chaps...
No, she's not quite... You were a bit... Oh, the R was too much of an R there, Chidge.
Shut up.
Don't worry, I'm not entering this discussion.
Very sensible, man.
But, guys, and look, this is a fellow who had hardly played in pre-season, got a few minutes against Mönchengladbach, I believe. Obviously, he didn't play in that first game, but he was...
Well, he's been carrying an injury.
He was absolutely brilliant, wasn't he?
It's really interesting because, I mean, he came on against United. Not only was he carrying an injury, but he picked up another knock. And, I mean, from what I was reading, is his ankle was swollen on Tuesday and Frank was saying, oh, you know, you okay to play? He insisted on playing. So, you know, it tells us everything we already know about his fantastic character. He was the best player on the pitch by a country mile on Wednesday night. I wouldn't have picked him. I wouldn't have risked him, actually, because we said it all last season, actually, to be fair, didn't we? We said we've got two world-class players at Chelsea and only two world-class players. One is Eden Hazard, the other is N'Golo Kanté.
No, that's ridiculous,
Chidge. OK, the other one is N'Golo.
N'Golo, right? Yeah.
And that's true. I mean, the guy is phenomenal. I mean, I know there's debate about where he plays and what position you get the best out of him, but I think the point is, Kerry, he's the kind of player, doesn't matter where he plays, apart from maybe in goal, but, you know, he could play anywhere because he's that good. He's a world-class player.
I'm not going to agree with if he can play anywhere. You knew that anyway. There's no way he can play anywhere.
Maybe not in goal.
He's the best holding midfield player in the world. That's what I believe.
Absolutely right.
But he's not the best offensive midfield player in the world, and he's a long way from it. But nevertheless, yes, he should be in the side. But having said that, you know, I've been impressed with the form of Jorginho in the two games.
Totally
and
agree.
Indeed pre-season. And listen, he's not a bad player. I said it last year. The fact Sarri is using him and N'Golo, as I'm going to call him now, because I don't want to get that discussion going again, being used in a different position by Sarri, and he's trying to create him into a better offensive player and playing on, you know, either side of the holding midfield player, created a lot of dissatisfaction, if you like, amongst Chelsea fans, because they believed, and it was developed an anti towards Jorginho. But he's actually a very good player in his own right. And, you know, it is going to be tough. And the way, if they carry on, the pair of them, both playing like this, there's a case for, and you talked about systems, and I hate that as well, because it's about players, not systems. But both players playing well will both be in the side, and who's to say there won't be two holding midfield players, and the system will get changed.
Well, that's kind of what he's tried to do with the 4-2-3-1. What I thought was interesting on Wednesday, and I think this is a point well worth making, Matt, is that, I mean, I know you don't like systems, but they did play 4-3-3. And they had Kovacic, Jorginho and Kanté. And I think that worked really, really well, because the problem with United was that they were... But, you know, there was such a big gap between the defence and midfield and we were getting cut to pieces. I think that really, really helped. But I think the point that I'd like to make out of that is how quickly Frank seems to have been learning, and also the players. Because we've
seen the qualities of the players.
Yeah, we got a bit of a dubbing, really. I mean, I know it was promising against United, but the way they kind of collapsed... And they did something about it. And I mean, for people saying, oh, Frank's he's an inexperienced manager, I thought that was promising, the fact that they were prepared to make that change.
The manager couldn't do anything about the goals anyway. What's the manager can he do about the goals? Mm. I mean... Players made mistakes, yeah. And it's as simple as that. Players have to learn from their mistakes. Just on the two older midfield players, if he's going to play the Kovacic or Barkley, or, you know, he's going to make a decision somewhere along the line, or there's going to be a mixture of the three of them throughout the season. The sad part of that is, for Tammy Abraham, in his own perspective, it's the lack of creativity in that midfield. And that's the big problem.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to... Jorginho playing well, Kante N'Golo playing well, and and Barkley or whoever, Kovacic, all playing well... We've missing Eden Hazard. It's heavily reliant upon Pedro, Willian, and
what do you think of Pulisic? You
know, he looked all right. Yeah. You also know I reserve my judgment. I don't look at one game and make a decision that he looks great. But I need a little bit more time than that.
Don't you think that Jorginho has the ability to be creative in that situation, because he seems to play some very good passes from that position?
So would N'Golo play in that position? And Jorginho gets switched around. I don't know what they do on a training field. But listen, he doesn't give much away, Jorginho. His passes are very crisp, very accurate. I don't know.
Good player, mate.
He's a good player.
What I like about Jorginho as well, and I imagine there probably was a discussion in the summer with Maurizio Sarri when he went to Juve, because of the fact that he likes him.
Yeah.
But the fact that Jorginho has come out and said, no, I'm going to be Jorginho, the Chelsea midfielder. I don't want people to think that I'm Jorginho, the Sarri midfielder.
Son of Sarri.
That's not who I am.
I love that. I wrote an article on that very point, and I was really delighted to see him come out with that, saying, I want to do my best at Chelsea. I want to prove what a good player I am, and I believe in what Frank's up to. and I'm not wedded to Sarri.
Could that have been because Sarri didn't want him?
No, because no Sarri's way. Taken no. him everywhere he's gone.
Yeah, and I believe Sarri would have took him as well. Yeah, definitely.
Without a doubt. And I think we're so quick now to expect so much, and this is football the way it is now, from players who come in to the Premier League, and we forget how different the Premier League is to other leagues, especially Serie A. So sometimes players take a season. They maybe take two sometimes to integrate. I remember with Alexander Chleb, who was at Arsenal, he took about two seasons to get going and then eventually got a move to Barcelona. But
Didier Drogba.
There you go.
Frank Lampard. Seriously, Frank Lampard. He's not agreeing with that. Yeah.
No, I'm not totally au fait with agreement. He's played in a lot of different positions by the Tinkerman and different, you know. Yeah. Everyone.
I don't think you did anybody any favours.
No, we had Slaviza Jukanovic. Frank was out right on the right, and we used to call him Frank Lamppost in those days because he looked like he didn't know what he was doing. He had no movement at all. And then the next season, he started to really get it together. That second season that he played for Chelsea, he was fantastic.
I think we're so quick to not give players enough time now. Kids who are like 19, 20, just relax a little bit. They've got to learn their trade. And I think just quickly, sorry, Jonathan, on Pulisic, I think this is a guy, and from what I've seen of him at Borussia Dortmund, not many minutes, but I've seen a few games and the USA, he's quick and he's direct. And I think regardless of how good you are, if you're quick and direct and you run at players, defenders, it's going to cause them problems.
Yeah, I was going to make a point that I'm not sure where Mount is playing at the moment because he took Pulisic off and he put Mount position. Yeah, but as a winger, I didn't think that Mount was specifically...
played all right, though.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah. I think Mount's a really... I have to say, I don't think Barkley figures in this lineup because Barkley has this terrible tendency to get caught in possession and give the ball away. Yeah. So I'm not convinced. I think he'll be... squad player for the whole of the season.
Really?
Which, when you look at his pre-season, which is the best pre-season he's had at the club, probably in a long time in his career, to think that he's now not going to be in the starting lineup. For me, it's also quite a shame, being a young English midfielder, you'd like to think that he'd get given that chance.
But where does he go?
Mount's a young English midfielder too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm not going to dive in on the back of that one. I wouldn't necessarily say and write off Barkley just yet.
Right. Mm. I love him, mate. I think he's a great little player. Listen, tell you what I want to just ask Kerry, because we got him here. It's nice, to get a player's mindset on this. Because, you know, what we've got at Chelsea at the moment, I think, is a squad where they all think they're going to have a chance. And if you're a player, right, and you're in a team, doesn't matter who, but let's say Chelsea, and you know the manager makes you believe that you've got a chance, what kind of a difference does that make to you?
Yeah, what happens is every pre-season, everyone thinks they've got a chance after whatever type of pre-season. Hence, you get players not taking time off. Hence, you get players coming back 2 weeks early so that they're ahead. They get a good pre-season in. The reality is the manager, after about a month to 6 weeks, will start picking certain players more than others, and it will start to hit home that I'm not getting enough game time, and then there'll start to be issues. But it doesn't matter. Frank will tell them, I'm sure. It's a squad game. This is the modern game. This is how we play. Everyone's going to get certain game time, but we will start to know, as supporters and people looking, what's your first 11? You'll get nine of them pretty much like that, and it'll be a...
It's always the way, isn't it?
It is always the way.
Other than last year where Sarri just said he didn't want drink water and that was the end of that.
Well, I think that's the difference, isn't it? Because actually, to be fair to Sarri, because we do have a few Sarri cultists who like to listen to this show, but Conte was like that too. You know, they had a squad, really, of 14 players that they wanted. Mourinho was like that when he came back. He only really liked 14, 15 of the squad. So we got a 25-man squad. So that's 10 very disgruntled players. You know they're not going to get much game time. That can't be good, can it?
I think certain people accept that. They know when they're going to sign a contract. If you're say, Didier Drogba's in a position and Chelsea go to sign you, you get offered a certain amount of money and you sign the contract, you know Didier Drogba will get more game time than you will.
Yeah. But you also know he might get injured.
Yeah. And when he gets
suspended,
and when he gets fit, you'll be back out where you were. But you know that when you put your pen to paper.
Sure you
and,
do.
Nothing wrong with everyone saying the right thing. I want to challenge for a position. I want to fight for a position. And pre-season, we've brought it all together. Everyone thinks they've got a chance. And the reality is, they have got a chance. But some have got a better chance than most.
Yeah, fair enough.
Absolutely. This is the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. Now, if you want to get in touch with us and ask Mr. Dixon a question, it's very easy to do so. 0208 70 20558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or get us on the socials at Love Sport Radio. Right, half an hour left with Kerry Dixon, so do get in touch. It's Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
This is Love Sport and the Chelsea Fan Show. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the guys on the Chelsea Fancast, Stanford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd. And we are joined as well by Chelsea legend Kerry Dixon. I said before the break, if you want to get in touch, very easy to do so. 0208 70 2558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well, or get us on the socials at Love Sport Radio. But right now, it is that time, and it's not going to be Kerry Dixon this week, for the Legend of the Week. Mr. Stanford Chidge, please reveal who it will be.
Well, the Legend of the Week is a player that I love almost as much as Kerry Dixon.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm saying something.
Of exactly the same era. Yeah, it's Pat Nevin. Wee Pat, as we love to call him, who I've also had the pleasure of working with and meeting several times. Not as much as I have with Kerry, but Pat, for me... I'll get into that in a minute. I mean, Pat was brilliant for us. I mean, he turned up in... 83-84, scored 14 goals. But the thing about Pat was a lot of people that were around then actually started comparing him to Charlie Cook, who is the generation before me's most revered player. Mm-hmm. And very similar, Scottish, really skillful, kept the ball close to his feet. But Pat was just one of these wonderful kind of jinky. He wasn't blessed with the most pace, but he could beat players for fun. And actually, what most supporters remember about Pat, I'd say two things, really. One is that run against Newcastle, which I'll get Kerry to explain in a minute, mm-hmm. and that penalty against Man City, which is talking of what they need to show.
You're talking about the Legend of the Week. That penalty should never have been mentioned.
But the other thing that for me and a lot of other people like me at that, I mean, I was about kind of, just over about 1920 when Pat turned up, and you know, I was quite thin in those days, believe it or not. I know it's hard to believe now. But in those days I was, and I was into kind of the same kind of music that Pat was in. And I'd never seen a footballer, you know, who liked the kind of music that I liked playing. Mm. I was just like, I just had this massive affinity for Pat. I loved him.
He was always seen with a Walkman.
I know, but he loved Joy
period.
Division, the Cocteau. And we had him on at the Supporters Trust SGM a couple of years ago, and I... because I'm the chairman, it was like my game, so I had the ball. And I got to ask Pat all the questions, and the first thing I asked Pat was, okay, Pat, Joy Division or the Cocteau Twins? Which for me was massive, because nobody, you know, it would have been all about the football. I love Pat Nevin as a player. So brilliant player.
If I'm right, the Cocteau Twins were written into a contract that he wanted to sign at Chelsea, yeah. or something, and that yeah. he in the new contract yeah. that he wanted to sign, it was that he was allowed to come
he
off
was
for
allowed
half
to go
time
and go and see their gigs.
Go and see their gigs.
Where he met I'm having a brain fart moment. But who was the singer for Altered Images? Claire Grogan. He went out with Claire Grogan at the peak of her powers. I mean. What
did
a
he?
Rock!
Did he go out with her?
No, he told me all about it. The
Gregory's girl.
Gregory's girl. That's it.
Happy birthday!
Yeah, that's
happy
right.
Birthday.
Dead pop stars. Anyway, you know,
different kind of podcast. Now
that's,
I like it.
That's my. I mean, I love Pat Nevin for so many reasons, but ultimately, he touched Chelsea supporters' hearts really for you know, his gifts as a footballer, which were absolutely brilliant. But this man to my right, not only did he play with Pat Nevin, but he scored a lot of goals. Thanks, David. Now, there's one quirky fact I'm going to give you here, because it's odd that we would choose Pat as a legend, but a little bit of it was me kind of fudging it because I knew Kerry was on. Kerry scored as many goals for Chelsea as Pat had appearances. How about that? You know, not including substitute appearances. How about that? 193 league appearances, I should be more accurate in saying. Of course, Kerry scored 193 goals.
Quite
how about
stat.
That? But what was he like to play with, mate? I mean, he supplied lots of goals for you, didn't he?
Yes, he did. The forward line of myself, David Speedy and Pat, all different types of players. No one ever knew what Pat was all about. John Neil knew what he was about. He saw him at Clyde. I think it was Clyde he came from. And, you know, he was spotted by Ian McNeil, chief scout, who's assistant manager to John Neil. Insisted on playing Wee Pat on the wing. There was Clive Walker, Paul Canneville, Mickey Thomas. You know, he came a little bit later. But Pat Nevin was the standing name on the team sheet. John Neil put him down every week. I don't know who he put first, but... Pat Nevin was definitely up in the top three we put first. And it was a game against Newcastle that we were an upcoming team in a club that was also a rejuvenated club, you know, by what was happening. In about a game, I think it was about October, November, against Newcastle, who were Keegan, Waddle, Beardsley, challenging for the second division. it was the big game. We were up there, Sheffield Wednesday, another team, and Manchester City were the main four. And, well, the big game, Newcastle were in town, and, you know, much vaunted side with their superstars. Well, we beat them 4-0, but it wasn't just the fact we beat them 4-0. I never scored, so, you know, it sticks in my brain a little bit. But everyone who was at the game who remembers the season would remember Pat Nevin. Mm. I was in the box waiting for the ball to be crossed. You think he picked it up around the halfway line. Well, he beat one player, he beat another player. Another one went sliding off into touch as he tried to get him. He cut inside, cut outside. We expected the ball to be crossed. No, it didn't. He turned back out, went back. One of the players was tracking back. He put his ball through that fella's legs. Then he went back the other way. In the end, everyone had stopped running. We're all just watching Pat Nevin. They didn't want the ball to be put into the middle. They wanted Pat to just keep beating Newcastle players. Chelsea fans were going, wee, wee. And it was quite incredible. Their fullback was dizzy. And he eventually got tackled. The ball never come in. Normally, myself and David Speedy would let him have it, but I think everyone's clapping. Like it was incredible, and it was a wonderful run. Pat, as Pat is, would said, "Sorry, chaps, I should have got it in quicker."
At that time, Kerry, obviously he was providing a lot of goals for you. You guys had you and David Speedy had an understanding with him. He's obviously a different character. This is someone who likes the DJ, likes his music. Off the pitch, was it important to have a relationship with him? Did you have a personal relationship with him, or was it very much we're about being on the pitch?
Oh, I think I still have a relationship with Pat Nevin in terms of he's a wonderful guy, very polite, endearing man, loved by everyone who meets him, keeps himself to himself. As a footballer, he wasn't your architectural type. He was a totally obscure person. He would sit in a corner. He wouldn't do all the things that footballers would do. He would just do exactly what Pat Nevin wanted to do. He'd wear a suit. He'd come in baseball boots and something that resembled a suit, jeans and a jacket and a tie that looked like a belt. I mean, out of a punk era.
It was like a wedge haircut.
It was something. There was nothing that would say, that's a footballer. Mm. Nothing about Pat Nevin would say, that is a footballer.
No, exactly.
But you've got that friendship with a player like that because of the way that you both played together, hasn't it? That's how I always felt in a team. If you've got somebody who knows where you're going to go and plays balls to you and anticipates, and you've got that thing with them,
it's just
almost like you don't need to have a hugely social relationship with them. You've got something with them.
I didn't have a hugely social relationship with any of the footballers. No. You know, I used to go home to Luton and Dunstable and have a hugely social relationship with all the people back there. Yeah, but, you know, Pat Nevin would have that type of ability to do the same, not just with myself and David Speedy. He played for Scotland, played for Everton for 5 years. You know, he was supplying strikers, Graham Sharp, Ali McCoist, Mo Johnson, people, you know, great strikers in their own right. And Pat Nevin was playing alongside them, as was David Speedy. You know, he was a wonderful talent. But as a man, is not just about his ability on the football pitch. You meet Pat Nevin and you find him an endearing man. Mm-hmm. And
very bright guy.
Very bright guy, very nice man, well-spoken.
Principled too, mate, actually, I think.
And very principled. Some people say at times over-principled, but we're not going down that route. let's just leave it at a wonderful man and a superb footballer.
Yeah, he is. Well, I mean, the other thing is, you know, which I'd forgotten this, actually, but, you know, I did do some homework occasionally, but He won Chelsea's Player of the Year twice while he was there. I mean,
I was second.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, you remember that.
Yeah, I was second to Pat and I think Speed. I was second to everyone.
Yeah. Oh, Kerry. Did you never win Player of the Year?
Never.
I cannot believe that.
Never. 9 years, never won it.
That
is unbelievable.
Well, do you know what? It's funny you mentioned Player of the Year because that's one of the stories. There's a couple of stories that I've heard from Pat Nevin. I actually met him when I was doing a Thursday night Europa League when it was on Channel 5 Thursday night.
He used to do that, didn't he?
Really, a real warmth from him that you don't get from a lot of ex-pros now who are pundits.
Really nice guy.
But he was saying a story about he was on like 180 quid or something a week. His rent was 100 quid. He had 80 quid to play with. He was
spend on record.
Yeah, he was only. And that's exactly what he was saying. And Ken Bates, he just got Player of the Year. He was 1 year into a 2 year contract. And Ken Bates said, "Look, we need to renegotiate your deal." And we don't need to, but okay, fine. Ken Bates said, "Right, what do you want? Go away and have a think about it." So he said he wrote a load of things on a piece of paper. He came back in before Ken Bates had even said hello. He said, "I want X amount." Ken Bates stormed out, slammed the door, drove off, left Pat Nevin in his office, at which point Pat Nevin says what he neglected to realise is that he'd got a boy here from the east end of Glasgow. So he did what a boy from the east end of Glasgow would do and rifled through Ken Bates' drawers in his office. And as a result, went through every player's contract. And he said he went home that night and he calculated the average of the players' contracts. He went back in the next day and he said, right, Ken, I want, I think it was £517.50 a week.
Oh, brilliant.
And Ken Bates said, no chance, no one's on that. He said, I know, but that's the average. How do you know that? Well, I did this. And apparently Ken Bates turned around and went, that's brilliant. Deal done. And he said ever since they had a really mutual respect. I think that's absolutely fantastic.
That's quality, man. That's a great story.
Yeah. Might have taught Bates a few things there as well. Never leave your doors unlocked for a player in there, especially with contracts.
Lock his drawers, mate.
Did you play in that game in Baghdad with the sponsorship of Gulf Air?
Yep.
And you had to wait around for a certain someone. Is this correct?
Correct.
Brilliant.
That's it in itself.
All right, we'll leave that one there.
What happens in Baghdad stays in Baghdad.
Gulf Air were the shirt sponsors
that's
at
it,
the time, weren't they?
That's it,
yeah, absolutely.
It's a bit like my story, which I don't think I told on air. I hope not. Probably get sued. But I interviewed Brian Robson years and years ago. I'm sure I told you this one, Matt, but about the Chinese state circus, because we found this documentary that was made about West Brom when they went to China on pre-season tour, and they had this bear that was being pulled along by a dog on a trailer, and then when he would like get off the trailer, climb up these steps on a slide, and then like a children's slide down it whilst blowing a trumpet. And we just thought, we've got to find a way to get this into the program. And I got to interview Robbo, who was one of, I was telling you earlier, a massive hero of mine. I loved the bloke as a player. Yeah, seriously.
I didn't realise that, mate.
Even though he was United, I was just absolutely, you know, just delighted to be interviewed.
One of the best
guy
I ever played with.
Yeah. Anyway, and I was desperate to get him to talk about this, to see, and he wouldn't talk to me about it at all. And Kerry did the whole thing. So, but I'm smart, so I kind of like would let him lull him back into his false sense of security, and then ask him again. He wasn't having that. He's too clever for me. So anyway, we got to the end of the interview, and then he finally told me why he wouldn't talk about it, which I can't tell you on air. But I absolutely roared with laughter, and suddenly understood, because he knew all the time that he knew what I was talking about, but he just wasn't going to talk about it, which I thought was brilliant.
Very clever.
Off air, I'll tell you why.
chaps, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I think I could talk about this for the next 2 hours, for crying out loud. It'd be lovely. But we have to move on, of course. And after this, we are going to be chatting to Kerry Dixon about his life and times at Chelsea FC.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast and Kerry Dixon. We've got about 12 minutes left, so we're going to take the opportunity to pick Kerry Dixon's brains and just find out what it was like at Chelsea, what his thoughts are of the current crop, and just any bit of nostalgia that we can latch on to. Kerry, I would like to know, I guess, who the best player was that you played with at Chelsea?
Yeah, this is always, you get asked these questions time and time again. And over the years, it's got to a stage whereby I say the best player, who was the best player? I played with many, many great players, and great players, and many, many good players, and many players that suited my style, like David Speedy, Pat Nevin, were both, as we've already mentioned, suited to me. David Speedy was the best strike partner I played alongside. And I played alongside Gary Lineker, I played alongside Tony Cotley, I played alongside Peter Beardsley. You know, all of these people, Gordon Dury, David Speedy was compatible with me. I played with Tony Adams as an under-23. I was an overage player. Tony was the greatest player I ever played against, in my opinion. But then Hanson and Lawrenson were good. Pallister and Bruce at United were good. I also played alongside my room partner with England, John Barnes, much underrated as far as I was concerned. I thought he was a wonderful talent who was in a battle for England caps, if you like, with Chris Waddle, who was also a great player. And then you've got Glenn Hoddle, Brian Robson, Peter Shilton. You say, who was the best player? How can you pick who was the best player? Who, you know, to try and pick a best player out of all of that, you know, you can't compare Shilton with Lineker. Mm-hmm. You know, 48 goals one end and I think 1,000 games and God knows how many appearances for England, 150 or something, or 125. Unbelievable, Peter Shilton. So, you know, there's numerous. The best is impossible. The best strike partner, David Speedy, because he was compatible.
Why was he so compatible, Kerry?
Because he could do all the things that I wasn't so good at very well, and I could do all the things that he wasn't so good at very well. So together, the partnership worked very well.
I have this lovely image, I think I've told you this before, of being in the North Stand and watching, and there's the ball being played to Speedo and him then just heading the ball for you, and you'd anticipated beautifully and just ran onto it and just slotted it
See,
home.
You've already mentioned role reversal. You know, the thought pattern would have been, and it sometimes worked, that the bigger man would win the flick on. In them days, you know, Eddie Nisvesi would drive the ball, there'd be a flick on, you'd beat the centre-half, and the other partner, the strike partner, would run on and it'd be the little man. But it didn't. David
like
Speedy
salmon,
was 5 foot seven, and he was beating 6 foot players in the air.
Yeah.
And I knew he would beat them in the air, so my anticipation would be off. And, you know, and that was just one of the comparisons. There were so many things, Speedy. I knew what he was going to do. You think he wasn't going to win a ball. I knew he'd slide into a thing, a tackle, win the ball off of fullbacks. And, you know.
So you're anticipating an enormous amount, because what I always feel with recent Chelsea centre forwards is that no anticipation. They're all a bit stuck on the edge of the penalty area instead of thinking, well, you know, I'll go for this, got the possibility of getting it. If I don't get it, I don't get it.
But the annoying thing about modern football is it's always the Italian, I call it, syndrome has come in with a European coach, and it's keep the football. And listen, I understand, keep the ball at all costs. They all come short. They want the ball to feet, lay it off, pass. Lots of passing, sometimes overpassing. You can still score a goal, like I've said earlier about Tammy Abraham, and I hope it comes back and, you know, leave a ball up the outside of a slow centre-half. What's wrong with that?
Lovely.
You know, the centre-forward runs past. No, there's an asset, there's a talent in having the pace, but if you're not going to use it...
That's good enough for Didier Drogba, wouldn't it?
You're strong, Didier.
and Costa and, was another kind of player like that.
Everyone's got their own assets and strengths. The anticipation and the understanding of the other players around them make it all compatible, and the more compatible it is, the better it looks and the better it works.
Did you practice that with him? Was it just something instinctively that happened between the two of you?
Yeah, you just get this look at a player closely, you see what he does. He knew what I would do. People, Mickey Hazard had the same thing. They weren't going to, we had coaching session where they said to me, feign to go to the far post and make runs to the near post. I was never going to the near post, you know, I was at the far post. And Pat Levin and Mickey Hazard and people, David Speedy, would leave the ball. I'd just leave the ball up in the air above the centre half. I would come from behind and I would outleap that centre half. It wasn't rocket science. It was knowing that if you left the ball in the right area, that particular person had an asset that he would do that, and it worked vice versa. And
you needed the accuracy as well of
the ability and the skill of the player and the individual to do that, to give the other player the opportunity and the skill to show what he can do.
Yeah. Which I think is lacking at the moment at Chelsea at the moment, actually. There's the pinpoint crossing isn't there as it should be.
They don't cross anymore. The centre-forward has disappeared.
And they don't. I mean, it's really interesting. You know, I was watching that 88-89 season on DVD last night.
Yeah.
Well, I was having a clear out, and I found all these old DVD, you know, hooky DVDs, basically, I bought at the CFC UK store. But I forgot, you know, what a good player Kevin McCallum. I was just saying to Kerry early on, some of the crosses he was putting in for you, and it was Gordon Jury that season.
Kevin Wilson,
were absolutely brilliant. You think, good God, if he was playing today, you know, he'd be very sought after.
Do you know what, on that, it's interesting. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Kerry, about how you feel like you would compare with players today, or how you think you'd fare, I guess, in the Premier League today. And back in your day, you're talking about yourself and Speedy. You had the two. Nowadays, you obviously either have the three or maybe the one. That duo of the Sutton and Shearers and the, you know, the Sheringham and Ferdinands doesn't happen anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, as I said, the game's changed. How would we fare? It's the old thing. Could you play today? I said in a previous show with Dave and that, they say, could I play today? Well, do you think Gary Lineker could get in Chelsea's team today? Do you think that, say, Peter Beardsley would get a game today? Do you think Brian Robson would play today? What do you think? And then you ask me, would Kerry Dixon, would I get a game? I'll leave that to you. But the answer would be the same on everyone.
You're better than Higuain, mate. Now, you know, at your age.
So could I play today? They say the game's got quicker. The game's got faster. Goodness me.
Well, I think I was worried that I was
going to... Would Gary Lineker get a game today? I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that's the... I didn't want to disrespect you, in a sense, by asking you that question, but there's the argument, isn't there, from so many people that football only started in 1992, because
rubbish,
that's when the
mate.
Premier League started.
But
I guess you're...
92, yeah.
And when you're... I mean, I know you played into the 90s, but
I've had that before. This is an argument I've had. They expunged all the records of great players, and, you know, players are in the top 10 of this and top 10 of that of Premier League players. They wouldn't even be in the top 50 if they'd done all players.
Well, but this goes right back to what you were saying earlier. I mean, Kerry, you got 8 caps for England, didn't you?
Mm. 4 goals.
And yet, this is a guy, I won't embarrass him again, or I'll try not to, but Kerry was with us for 9 seasons. 5 of those seasons, he scored over 20 goals. Mm. Now, you look at the Premier League now, and look how much, you know, value is placed upon a striker who can bag you over 20 goals a season. Look how few there are. Kerry only got 8 caps for England, and he's one of the best strikers in the country by a country mile, and yet he was up against Gary Lineker. Who were the top strikers then?
Well, Woodcock, Mariner, Trevor Francis, Tony Cotty, Ian Wright, Peter Beardsley, Mark Aitley, Clive Allen.
All of whom were scoring over 20 goals in the season for their clubs.
Yeah, they all got England caps. Mick Harford, Brian Steen, there's loads of them.
Loads of them. How many have we got now?
Mm. Harry Kane.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, Marcus Rashford, maybe. You know, he's going to get game time this season.
Maybe this season, yeah.
But there aren't many, you know.
Consistently scoring 20-plus goals in the league.
So qualitatively, Matt, mm-hmm. there's a case to be made saying football was a lot better in Kerry's day.
Well, it's really interesting to hear the theories as well, in that it's not, I mean, you use the term, it's not rocket science. And if you put that to a Pep Guardiola or a modern-day manager, they absolutely shake their head. They go,
there's so much theory to it, but sometimes we
overthink the game.
I think skill is skill. Quality is quality. Talent is talent. When it was your birthday the other week, Chelsea put up a brilliant kind of montage of some of your goals, and they had the two you scored against Man United. Remember those?
Yeah, the away game.
But the one that in the last minute, and you hit that first time.
Speedo,
ball came through, and you hit it. You just beautifully hit it first time, straight, went like a dart, straight in the corner, all the way along the ground. You know, he can play now. Easily, because it's just natural goal scorer.
Well, I believe that, you know, the only thing that's changed is the pitch is so much better. The ball is obviously better, you know.
A fitness level bigger now, do you think? The athleticism, you don't?
Don't think so, no. And I don't think they're over-pacey yet. I said before,
I
could run 100 yards in under 11 seconds. Pacey?
Yeah.
It'd be a good race, me and Tammy Abraham. He's not bad. He's quite quick. Yeah.
I think he might just have the edge on you now, but only just, mate. Well, only just.
Now? Me at now.
Stamford Bridge is another one that's quite interesting. A very, very different place to the ground that you played at. Different atmosphere, just the whole different dimensions of the ground. I don't want to ask you questions that you've always been asked, but we discussed it outside for a little bit in terms of the cars that were around the ground. It amazes me that, and I don't know whether there was a story of a window being smashed or anything like that. Did that ever happen when you were playing?
I'm not sure. It might have been a Nigel Spackman shot at goal. I'm not quite sure. It could have been or an attempted pass by someone, but no. I can't remember many of the cars getting smashed, but you're right. There were the pensioners' cars, and they parked in a very dangerous position. They thought it was safe, but with some of the players we had playing, I mean, John Cody attempted cross or something like that. The cars were in danger.
Drug rugby clearance,
all sorts of stuff could be happening. But no, the atmosphere is different, and I've got to say, the atmosphere on certain games was better.
Mm. Really? Mm,
yeah. In certain games was better, even though it had a larger area and so on. That's not a knock to the current fans or anything like that. In certain games, the general atmosphere is better now because it's a closer proximity to the pitch.
Yeah.
But certain games, and they were up for it, they could be miles away over here in the shed and in the benches and in the West End. But they were up for it, and the noise and the anticipation and the fervour would get to the players, and you would know you're in a game.
And we've got about a minute and a half left, chaps. Chidge, I kind of want to put this to you and Kiddo yourself as well. Any really fond memory that you want to finish on with Kerry Dixon?
Goodness gracious me.
What beat you scoring at Arsenal?
Yeah, Highbury, 84.
It's the main memory mine as well, I have to say.
Well, and we were talking about this earlier, that weirdly, Kerry was playing for Luton at the time, but the 1994 FA Cup semi-final when Chelsea won 2-0. And we all cheered Kerry off, singing "One Kerry Dixon, there's only one Kerry Dixon."
This is
right after the whistle, when we've just got into our first FA Cup final for 25 years, 24 years. And, you know, we were thinking about him because we love him.
It was a great moment, yeah.
Indeed. There is only one Kerry Dixon. Kerry, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, chaps, and good luck and rest of the show. And thanks to all the listeners.
Lovely. No problem, mate.
This is Love Sport.
The Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stanford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd. If you want to get in touch with us and put a question to the guys, to speak to the guys, to moan at the guys and tell them that they don't know what they're talking about.
That's
0208 7020 558. Get in touch on the socials at Love Sport Radio. You can also WhatsApp us on that number, 0208 7020 558. Right, guys, we are going to talk. We're going to go back and talk about last weekend. The Man United result, 4-0 in Frank Lampard's first game in charge. There are a few stats here, and I'm going to get them out of the way to begin with. Biggest defeat by United since 1965. Worst Premier League managerial debut since Poyet at Sunderland. That was when they were beaten 4-0 by Swansea in 2013. Biggest defeat a Chelsea manager had endured in his first game since Danny Blanchflower.
No.
Apparently so.
No. Well, okay, what was the Danny Blanchflower then?
7-2 by Middlesbrough.
That's not true.
Brilliant.
It was opening day match.
This is why we're here.
Blooming Joe.
No, in his first game, though. Not an opening day. Danny Blanchflower's first game.
Okay, fair play. Yeah, all right.
However, I'm going to flip this on its head.
It's the biggest defeat. The last time we shipped four on the opening day was against Liverpool in 1970.
69?
No, 1970. 70. Funnily enough, we won the FA Cup that season.
There you go.
Yeah.
What did I tell you about the United stat? The only team to lose on the opening day of the season and still win the Premier League. Three times they've
You'll
done that.
You'll win nothing with kids.
There you go. Indeed. Absolutely.
So there you go.
But Chelsea have more possession.
Yeah.
More corners, more shots, more shots on target. So, listen, before United scored the second goal, Chelsea were very much in that game. You've hit the woodwork over the course of the two games now, that one and the Super Cup game. So, like we said in the first hour of this show, things are still positive, right? There was a bit of doom and gloom after last week.
It was. I was very doomed and gloomed by it,
I'll tell you someone who didn't help the cause, and I don't want to dwell on him because he shouldn't get airtime, is Jose Mourinho. He sort of went for Lampard a bit, didn't he? And he said he shouldn't have played Mason Mount. And if William was sort of half fit, he should be playing.
What do you expect from a complete and utter pathological narcissist?
There you go. Absolutely.
And that is a clinical definition.
But Lampard,
you can pay me later.
Lampard hit out a bit of that, didn't he? He snapped.
Good for him.
He snapped it.
I think I read an article this week which was even more interesting because it was really intimating the fact that Lampard, A, learns quickly and has, B, learnt from Mourinho in the way that he's learnt how to deflect away from the players and make him or another story the issue or the story. And I think that bodes very well for the future, providing he doesn't become a raging narcissist like Mourinho. But I don't think there's any chance of that.
And providing he doesn't have to find things to deflect from, because it's better if we're winning, obviously.
Frank Lampard is actually one of his greatest strengths is his humility.
Absolutely.
Something, a word that is alien to even Mourinho, who speaks five languages.
And you're seeing that in his interviews as well. And he was quite honest. Yeah. He's been quite honest after both games. And he said, football's won and lost in the boxes. Yeah. United were clinical. They put their chances away.
He made
no
excuses, did he? I mean, it was fine margins, Matt, interestingly enough, as I think that's what you were alluding to. But I think we talked about this on Monday's show, didn't we? The one thing that really concerned me most was the implosion. You know, where we went from 2-0 down to 4-0 down very quickly. And you and I mean, I was doing the show in here on Sunday afternoon. You were popping in now and again. And you were saying at the time, oh, God, Chidge, because you could see the horror on my face while I was broadcasting, which is, there are people that have yet to be discovered in the Amazon rainforest, so you could see the horror on my face. But Matt was saying, Chidge, this could be a real... I mean, this could be 5, 6, 7. It was looking like that. And I think, Jonathan, I was saying this on Monday, that we were worried about the implosion. And actually, the thing is, the ability for Chelsea teams to implode is not a current problem. It's not even last season's problem under Sarri when it happened. It was happening when Conte was in charge. So, and I wonder if it's about a lack of two things, really. Not character, because I think they showed they have character by coming back against Liverpool on Wednesday. I think it's a lack of leadership, possibly experience, and also physicality. I think Chelsea still get bullied off the ball a lot, and United are a great big lump of a side. Some of your players are big physical units, and I do wonder about that. And this is, of course, a legacy really of Chelsea post 2013, when we started to try and be Barcelona light. And we need some big old lumps like we had with Ballack and Essien and Mikel. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, of course.
I'm not even sure if it was as
as complicated as that, actually. I was worried that he changed the pattern, Solskjaer, so that they defended a bit more.
Well, they just avoided the midfield.
And they just broke unbelievably quickly, and we didn't deal with it because we were pushed up.
No, we didn't deal with it at all. We haven't dealt with counter-attacking for many a season. I think, sorry, Matt, there are a few other things that we talked about, weren't there? And I think one of them is that there are a lot of current issues, which I would call legacy issues, not being able to counter-attack, deal with counter-attacking teams being one of them. The physicality stroke leadership being another, perhaps.
It wouldn't be the case if Kante was playing in the United game, because he's very on the ball for that, unless he's playing terribly far forward, which we found out on several occasions when Sarri had him had him playing further forwards. But I thought that in fact the goal that when Dave was off the pace, when the ball was booted down from Pogba to Rashford, I'm not convinced. I think if Kante had been there, he'd have beaten him to it. He'd have got back. But we were then worried about Dave being found out. Dave had a very fine game against Liverpool, didn't he?
He did. Do you know what was going through my mind then?
What?
You'll love this. I think that we've missed an opportunity by not having a song for Aspilicueta, you know, on the lines of Dave is on the road again.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Dave is on the flanks again.
Yes, Dave is
back on giving
form
handouts
again.
Now, which he was, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Poor old Aspi. There's a real debate about whether he's getting a bit past his sell-by.
Well, he mentioned Reece James twice, didn't he?
He did.
Frank Lampard.
Been a great servant at Chelsea.
He has been a great
servant. Everybody's time comes, and I wonder if it might have done.
And you always seemed, it's almost not as if there's a gradual decline. There always just seems to be two or three moments throughout a season where you suddenly go, oh, that's not quite right. And I have to say that Marcus Rashford goal, when he was put through by Pogba, and listen...
Great ball, great break,
but I couldn't believe he was allowed to get a shot away. I know that Aspi went on the wrong side of him, but still, just get a tackle.
I'm less worried about that. I thought that was just an absolutely brilliant class goal. I was more worried about the Martial goal where he let him go and he let him get in front of him. That's criminal as a defender. Criminal.
And the stat when in fact he'd given the ball away.
Well, they're 22 times. I know, which is frightening. I love Dave. So I hope it's not the beginning of the end.
But you know, it might
more
be,
like the end of the beginning.
It might be that, you know, within Frank's team, he doesn't figure it. If Frank is going to make
Frank
this evolve, you know,
yeah.
he'll just say, I'm sorry, you're not going
to
be in it.
Frank, yeah, but I think going back to what we were saying earlier when Kerry was on, I don't think Frank will just discard people and throw them away. But I think Frank will pick who he thinks is playing best at that moment in time. And I think he said some lovely things about Mason Mount this week in response to Mourinho's criticism of Mount. That, you know, I'm watching what people are doing on the training pitch. I don't care who you are. If you're putting it in for me on the training pitch and you look good, you're going to get a chance to start.
But, Marty, that's a point that Kerry once made, that he said it didn't actually matter if you played on the training pitch.
There was that era.
There are a certain number of players who will be picked regardless. Whereas I'm not convinced that's the case now in this world. You have to actually put your time in.
Yeah, you do, because it's very, very competitive and you've got 25 players willing to play. It'll be very, very interesting to see what happens. But I just
very, very quickly, sorry, Chidge, on Aspilicueta. I know that we're saying he's maybe coming to the end. He's only 29, Aspilicueta now. I guess the argument is that he's played, you know, 35-plus games for the past four or five seasons. So is it that he's simply
60.
Playing to... Well, yeah, sorry,
because,
I'm Premier League games, of course.
Aspi, you know, hardly ever misses a game. Hardly ever misses a game. I mean, this is the thing. He's been a real stalwart for us, but... You know, he's been there now for 6 years. He turned up in 2013, didn't he, after we won the Champions League?
Yeah.
You know, he's been there a long time. You know, as I said, who knows? Everybody's different. You know, some people can go on until they're 36. Some people, it comes to them earlier. I mean, we remember we were talking about Branagh, weren't we? Branagh, who had been an absolute legend for the club. But he just suddenly fell off a cliff one season. And when he looked like he was running backwards. You know, it can happen. I don't know if... Aspilicueta isn't quite there yet, but I think we're beginning to see signs. But frankly, until Reece James is fit, his place is secure, because I can't see anybody else coming in to take his place.
There isn't anybody else.
Well, that's it. That centre-back role. I mean, the centre-back role in particular. Kurt Zouma, what are your thoughts there? Are you thinking
against United, brilliant against Liverpool.
Yeah, fine against Liverpool.
But you see, I think this is an interesting point as well. We are going to see this, I think, all season. You know, I think there will be a rate of progression. But when you play youngsters, they are going to make mistakes and they are going to be terribly inconsistent. And I think one week we're going to be brilliant And I think the next week could be an absolute car crash. And I think that's what we're going to see this season.
I was
season.
Intrigued that Tomori came on and looked really good.
Didn't he look great?
Yeah.
I mean, he struggled a bit to begin with, but he got his head round. I think he's a cracking potential player.
But it's beginning to make sense why Luiz went, if he's got four centre-halves and he's interested in playing them.
Look, I love Luiz.
Yeah. We all do.
But a lot of these players, I would call them bed blockers. You know, they just will stay and stay and stay. And I don't blame them. They get paid a huge amount of money. They've had a lot of success at the club. But, you know, I think we're at that stage now where they need to go. And these youngsters need to be given the chance. Because this is the only time, possibly the only time it might ever happen. And if you're over 30 and you're still earning a wage at Chelsea and you're perhaps not as good as you were, then you are bed blocking.
Is there any room for Willian? Because Pedro played fantastically.
He did.
Having been awful against United.
Well, he's got no excuse for being inconsistent at his age and experience and considering what he's won. But it's up to Willian, isn't it? And I personally hold the view that with Hazard gone, it will go one of two ways with Willian. Either he's got a chance to really make that position his own, come out from under Hazard's shadow, play in the position that he prefers and be the world-class talent that he should be, or he won't. But the bottom line is right now he's got Pulisic right behind him saying, give me a chance, give me a chance, give me a chance.
Pulisic can play on the right as well, can't he?
You've got Hudson-Odoi coming back in a month.
And Cheek.
Exactly.
Well, this is where you were talking about that creativity in midfield earlier. I mean, that is where it's going to come from.
Well, I also thought, I think Kerry was being a bit unfair on Jorginho, actually, who I think is a very creative player. He's got a very good vision. But yes, Cheek's ability to hold the ball is also something that is without
physicality.
Yeah.
What I was saying earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, he's
got options, mate.
Yeah, Hugh, excellent options. And I think Cheek should be playing for England all the time, actually, ultimately, when he gets back in the team.
The only
good talent.
The only worry I have about Ruben is his, you know, tendency to get injured. I think that
he's got the back problem.
Well, you see, if it is the back, I think, because he's done his Achilles, didn't he? But
it could be related to the back, I think,
from my knowledge of back injuries. Yeah. You know, basically,
it's your glutes as well.
Well, it all stems from there, you know. So you can have this back niggle and it can lead to other things getting weaker and getting.
Spackman had that very problem.
Backman or Spackman?
Spackman. But Spackman!
I love Nigel Spackman.
Was that the chant?
Yeah.
It was.
It was.
Brilliant.
You've never heard that before?
No, I haven't.
That's great. Yeah.
I heard Man United used to sing for Jap Stam. That was one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was one of the early ones, and then it turned into the.
We had another one actually on that theme, which was just as good, which was na 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 Stanich. You remember that?
I do remember that.
Mario Stanic. I loved him. Yeah. He used to crunch.
He scored a wonderful, wonderful goal against West Ham.
West Ham.
And never scored a goal like that again.
He scored two in his debut.
Yeah, two in his debut. Yeah.
Brilliant. Anyway,
I'm hearing from our producer Max as well that apparently Crystal Palace did that with Batshuayi, Batman. Batman Batshuayi, so
but
maybe you could bring it back.
Crystal Palace are rubbish at everything. we basically came up with Batshuayi, I like it, That's a song.
Brilliant, that is absolutely a song. Will you be chanting this weekend? You have Leicester City, a first win of the Premier League season, hopefully for the Blues. We are going to be chatting to Leicester's very own Jake Watson about that.
This is Love Sport.
The Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd.
Kiddle. I was slightly late then, wasn't I?
You're slightly late. You had a bit of a delay
deliberately.
There.
Deliberately. No,
deliberately. Oh, deliberately. Yeah, just to throw me off.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, chaps, we've already said Leicester this weekend. Brendan Rodgers returning to Stamford Bridge. Never won. Never beaten Chelsea, in fact. 12 games.
Wow.
6 draws and 6 defeats. But Leicester looking ahead to what may be a bright campaign this season under Brendan Rodgers. I am delighted to say that we've got Love Sport's very own Jake Watson on the line to discuss all of that. How are you doing, Jake?
Very good evening, chaps. How are we?
We're well, thank you.
Very good to have you on, boss.
Good to be here.
What's going to happen at the weekend? Talk to us.
I have absolutely no idea, which is of no real help and use to you guys.
Okay,
you
know, thanks for coming on, mate.
Great to talk to you, Jake. We'll speak to you next week.
Fun as always, chaps. No, in all seriousness, it's a bit of a strange one, isn't it? Because Chelsea's two games, they've lost, but 4-0 was incredibly harsh at Manchester United, and the suggestions and thoughts that they could and should have beat Liverpool. And for Leicester, we played Wolves, and we drew 0-0, and it was pretty boring.
Should have lost, Jake, if that, you know, if that goal was stood.
100, yeah. Well, 100%, it should have stood. It's a ridiculous rule.
No, it shouldn't have done,
That's a debate for another day, kid. No, Jonathan, that's a debate for another day. Let's not get stuck into VAR.
Okay.
We were playing a Wolves team, right, who'd obviously had Europa League games already. So we were kind of sat there thinking, well, they're going to be tired, you know, like we saw with Burnley last season. But actually, Wolves were a lot more kind of sharper than what we were. It looked like it was our first game of the season. And we ended up just cancelling each other out. So to be honest, I don't really know where Leicester are at. And we're not too sure at the moment whether Chelsea are any better under Frank Lampard at the moment than what they were at the back end of last season. So honestly, to predict this one at the weekend is pretty impossible. But I think it'll be a relatively entertaining game, significantly more so than the Leicester Wolves one anyway.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely sound as a pound, Jake, that analysis of it. Here's the thing. You've lost Harry Maguire. You've got this young Turkish lad. I'm doing my best Brian Clough here because there's no hope of me pronouncing his name as you will.
Kalia Soyuncu.
They're him. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Is he any good? Is he going to make up for losing Harry Maguire, who actually, after the performance against Chelsea last week for Man United, looks cheap at 75 million or 80 million?
Yes, he will do. Don't get me wrong. We were a little bit nervous about how he was going to do because obviously there is going to be a lot of attention on him. You know, if you're going to sell a player for £80 million or a record fee, then whoever's going to replace him has got a big boots to fill. Soyuncu was brought in last season from the Bundesliga, and previously, you know, Man City and Arsenal were sniffing around him. He's always been a really talented player, but the problem was when he came in was that he couldn't speak a word of English and he took a long, long time to settle. And obviously we then had Harry Maguire and Johnny Evans. So he struggled to get a kick last season, but when he did play, he looked like a really good footballer, but incredibly rash, incredibly raw. And there was still obviously that fear that when he came in, he was still the same player. Now, in terms of liking him to anyone, decent shout really for someone like David Luiz. Like, he's a wonderful footballer, technically. You know, he could play in midfield as well, but, you know, he has got a bit of a mistake in him. He was really good against Wolves, but there was one occasion we ended up doing a Cruyff turn in the 18-yard box. Now, it came off, but he is one of them that he played well, but next week he could end up kind of having an absolute shocker. Or being brilliant, but just having one really costly mistake. So I really like him as a player, but yeah, he's got big boots to fill, and probably he won't quite be at the Maguire level, but potentially, he could be a top Premier League defender for sure.
So, Jake, can I ask you? I got the impression you were saying that neither team played very well towards the end of last season. Did you not say that? Because I thought that Leicester started to get excellent under Rodgers, and also Chelsea were much, much better against Leicester because that was the form that took them into the Europa League final, yeah.
And got us in the top four.
Yeah, because I remember prophesying at the time that I thought that Chelsea played so well against Leicester that I wasn't surprised I thought they were going to win the Europa League final easily, and I was proven correct. But I thought under Rodgers that you'd gone on a really terrific run, and you looked a very good side. Are they not showing that promise at the moment, even after one game?
No. I say that my point was originally just on the one opening game itself. Leicester looked kind of undercooked, and it looked like our first game of the season.
Wolves looked
a lot sharper than this. So I said it was just quite hard to judge Leicester on the basis of that one game. But yeah, you're right, Jonathan. The back end of last season under Rodgers, we were really good. We didn't want the season to end. To be honest, you know, if it had gone on for another four or five games, we could have snuck in and got that seventh place as opposed to Wolves and be playing in the Europa League as opposed to them. So now look, everything under Brendan Rodgers is incredibly kind of positive. Everyone's excited, and to be honest, I think everyone's a little bit too excited. Lots of talk about us, you know, perhaps breaking into the top six or Europe. I think it's all very premature. I think it's a really exciting team. It's a really young team. It's a very small team as well. I think the team will get better and better as the season goes on, and perhaps
they'll get bigger as the season goes on.
Well, they might do because they're young, so they'll grow.
Yeah,
you know.
True.
Well, they need to because honestly, you look at the team physically. You had Harry Maguire in there, so if you're going to do any set piece, you've seen it with England as well. Just ping it in the back post, Maguire peels off, nods it back across, and hope to pick up pieces. Now we've got absolutely no one over the height of 6 foot. I mean, I think Johnny Evans is the tallest, and even Johnny Evans is his biggest kind of attribute, isn't it? His physical presence, is it? So it's a very small team. It's a very, you know, physically weak one, a very talented and nice team to watch. But I do worry about us away from home, and I do worry about some of the bigger sides. I think if you want to play a game of football, get the ball on the deck, and it'd be an open game, Leicester will probably come out on top more often than not. But if it starts getting a kind of a bit tough and a bit physical, they might get bullied out by a few. And I think that'd be a decent way for Chelsea if they want to beat Leicester this weekend to go about.
You could say the same about Chelsea. In fact, we were earlier on, Jake, that I think that, you know, there's still a legacy at Chelsea of the policy to kind of become Barcelona light by getting kind of small tick-attacker type players.
We haven't got a plan B, and that became really apparent against Wolves, that, you know, they sat in and they played the three centre halves, the 3-5-2, and they just forced us out wide, and we could not break them down. Leicester completed the most passes out of any side in the Premier League at the weekend, but I think we registered one shot on target, and that was a pot shot from Harvey Barnes from outside the area. So we did not test Patricio in the Wolves goal whatsoever. We had all the ball, played nice football, but from an hour in, we could tell that we had to change something unless the game was going to end 0-0. And from 80 minutes, you sat there knowing that nobody was going to score a goal. There's no one on the bench in terms of changing things up. You know, if we wanted to throw on someone like Islam Slimani or just anyone, there isn't that plan B. You know, it's a nice team, they're all young, exciting footballers, but you're just swapping winger for winger, or, you know, number 10 for number 10. So, you know, if things aren't going their way in the game, if it's completely relying on an individual bit of brilliance, if that makes sense, for them to come on and do better than the person playing in their position, we were unable to kind of change a formation or bring on, you know, someone to completely stir up things, you know, like an Andy Carroll, that kind of thing.
It's a bit like Surrey last year, actually. It's the same thing.
I have to say, Jake, I know you said there that people are perhaps getting a bit too excited. I'm probably one of those. I'm one, to be honest. And when we all do our predictions at the start of the season and everybody feels out that what they think the Premier League table is going to be and who's going to win the FA Cup and the Golden Boot and all the rest of it, I have to say that I had Leicester, and people might balk at this.
Above who? Above who, though, Matt? This is the thing. Everyone's saying Leicester could do it. Fine, you know, I think it's a nice team, it's a really exciting team, great manager, but looking at that top six, look what Arsenal ends up doing in the end in the transfer window, look what Man United ends up doing, and look at Chelsea's squad. Spurs, Liverpool and Man City, there's nowhere they're dropping out of it. Tell me who Leicester are going to finish above there.
It's a very good question. So in terms of those, the summer business then, I mean, you said that Arsenal have obviously had a great window. Dennis Praet is obviously coming in from Sampdoria as well, hoping that he's going to make an impact. Is he likely to play this weekend?
I don't think so. No, Dennis Praet, he will basically be one of our kind of midfield options. So the midfield three kind of picks itself with Ndidi, Tielemans and Maddison. And the problem was that after those three, there wasn't really anyone. If you're going to play three central midfielders, you need at least two on the bench who are of a similar level, because you can't expect those three to play every single week. We had Hamza Chowdhury and everyone else is kind of, that they're not part of Rodgers' plan, so we needed to bring another midfielder. So that's where Dennis Praet went in. The big thing we didn't do, which I really wanted us to do, was instead of going out and buying a defender to replace Harry Maguire, because I always had faith in Fiorentino, and there's another guy called Filip Benkovic, was to go out and buy another winger, spend £40-50 million on a winger. So the team is great. Then you've got Vardy, Ayoze Perez, and there needed to be someone else. And it highlighted my point exactly at the weekend when we played Wolves, because he ended up playing James Maddison as the winger and then bringing Hamza Chowdhury into the middle. So he's left Mark Albrighton, Harvey Barnes on the bench and Damari Gray not even in the squad. So that shows he doesn't trust those three. Mm. But if he doesn't trust those three and he's got £1 billion kind of owner and £80 million from Harry Maguire, why did he not go out and buy another winger? That for me is where the side clearly lacks. That, you know, Harvey Barnes is nice and I like all these players, but if Brendan Rodgers doesn't trust them, then there's no point kind of having them on the bench. And you certainly don't want James Maddison playing out on the wing. So, say, when you look at what ultimately United did do by bringing in Maguire, you look at what Arsenal ultimately did do by bringing in Nicolas Pepe, Kieran Tierney, etc., and David Luiz, that then meant for me that their transfer business and their squad was then ending up significantly stronger than what Leicester did. At the start of the window, you looked at Leicester's squad and thought, yeah, this is great. But by the end, I'd go as far as to say, because we lost Maguire and didn't bring in a winger, that those then sides are in a significantly stronger position than what perhaps people think we are or were.
But isn't Rodgers capable of making what he's got into something better than you would have, the sum of the individuals, you know, creating the sum of the individuals as a decent team? Because he seemed to be doing terribly well last year with what he had. I mean, I think he's a decent manager, and he's obviously seen it as a project. So aren't you having not much faith in the in what he could do.
No, no, I've got complete faith in Brendan. I don't know whether they tried to get in another wing, and that may just be my personal view, but I do think it highlights the fact that, you know, by playing Maddison out there, that he doesn't trust the guys that he's got. But no, mate, you're right in the sense of, you know, when we did have Claude Puel there before, what I hated about Claude Puel was that we had this squad of huge potential that you thought that the potential was kind of limitless with them, but the manager had a clear limit in terms of what he could do. You know, you were going into the season knowing that there was only so far you could go under Claude Puel, and there's nothing worse, is there, going into a season knowing what the outcome's going to be already, which is a mid-table finish. With Brendan, you kind of don't know where it could go. It could be sixth, it could be fifth, but it could be mid-table. And that's why I say, even if we don't break into it, I think it's going to be an exciting season just watching the team and watching the manager. I think Brendan is the very best appointment that a team like Leicester could have possibly hoped for. And, I mean, certainly the last kind of 10 years of my lifetime, probably the most exciting appointment we've made. I think, honestly, I think he's top class. And I think a few of the top six boys have missed a trick by not getting him. But I also completely understand why perhaps, you know, an Arsenal and Chelsea wouldn't have gone for him. But for Leicester, yeah, he's absolutely superb.
What do you think the score's going to be?
mate, honestly, I have no idea. I really don't. Because I think everyone was just a little bit underwhelmed by Leicester last week. Because as you say, everyone's been talking about, you know, could Leicester be the side that do it? Well, they really weren't that exciting. You know, it's the home game, everyone's turned up expecting a good performance, and it was very underwhelming. So hopefully they're going to have to be better. And at the same time, again, we've got a situation where we played Wolves, who just played on Thursday night in the Europa League. We're now playing Chelsea, who again have played in the midweek. So Leicester fans again will be hoping that we're playing a team that is a little bit tired, or, you know, or there's changes made because people have played too much in midweek. So that's what Leicester will be banking on. And if Chelsea are a little bit kind of still finding their feet under Lampard, and a few of them are still a little bit leggy from playing extra time during the week, then Leicester have got a chance. I just hope for it to be an entertaining game. Just a very quick one to flip it back around on you guys, though. On losing to United and losing to Liverpool, if you lose to Leicester, is anyone going to start getting a little bit kind of funny about Frank?
Oh, crikey. You just poked the bear there.
Not unless you're a complete idiot, Jake.
Well, I'm not. No, I'm just asking you.
You tee him up, mate. I'll hit him out of the park.
Yeah, I think that's a resounding no to that question.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'd ask.
Listen, Jake, thank you very much for joining us, boss. Always a pleasure to chat to you.
Great to hear. Speak to you, Jake.
Cheers. Stuff, Jake. Hope you see you Sunday.
That was cool, Jake, man. Watson, our very own Jake Watson, of course, talking about Leicester's visit to Stamford Bridge. Frank Lampard's first ever Premier League game as a manager at Stamford Bridge. We'll be getting all the reaction from the boys after this.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself with Matt Beadle and the guys from the Chelsea Fan Cast, Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd. Yep. We've got about 25 minutes or so left of the show. We've just spoken to Love Sport's Jake Watson about his opinion on the game. I have to say he was slightly more, I'm not going to say pessimistic, but I guess he is a Leicester fan and he can see it from the inside. And I do think, and myself included, I've got a bit carried away with Leicester to the point where I actually thought they might even be able to squeeze into the top four. Listening to him, that potentially sounds like it's not going to be a realistic prediction.
But it was Wolves they played against. Wolves seemed to play this unbelievably negative, just stop the opposition from playing. And it may have been that Leicester, because the game against Chelsea last season, which Wolves just nicked, all they did was defend. Mm. And they may have done exactly the same thing. I obviously wasn't there, but the impression I got was that he was saying that they had huge possession and couldn't do anything with it. Therefore, it's almost too early to judge.
Absolutely.
Jonathan, bang on. It's too early to judge. You know, it's a long old season. Anything can happen. You know,
anything can happen. And it's Frank Lampard's first ever Premier League game in charge of Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Fellas, he's aiming, by the way, not to be the first Premier League manager, or the first Chelsea manager since Vialli 21 years ago, to lose his first two Premier League games.
Yeah, but this is all nonsense, Matt.
I know, Matt. That's why I say it. But then Vialli, you're going to react to it.
Go and write for the Sun or something.
But Vialli then won nonsense. The European Cup, Winners' Cup, and the League Cup.
Yeah, but this
Premier
is
League
after.
Games.
No, this was basically the
Premier League games.
No, I know.
But this is the season that Vialli got sacked and was replaced by Ranieri. Because if you remember,
of course he
had that terrible start, and by September he was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he had and that, we sang Violi for about the next three months.
He made that terrible purchase of the ultimately award-winning Roma fullback, whose name escapes me, who played left
Panucci.
Back.
Panucci.
Panucci.
Very good, very man. Panucci. Very yeah. good.
Very, very,
very
good.
Very good.
Who... Then Ranieri insisted on playing yeah. regularly. And,
who, I mean, going on his history, a good player. Won yeah. titles with Real Madrid,
not
played
at
in Italy, Serie
not
A.
Chelsea.
But not at Chelsea, place, no.
Wasn't poor, wasn't
but
he,
But look,
Chidge.
Let's getting back to the yeah. point. You know, this hyperbole, oh, if he loses three matches, it'll be, you know, will there be pressure on... It's just absolute nonsense made up by the media to get people like me wound up and to get people with less brains clicking on their stupid articles. The context is everything. With this season, Frank Lampard is here for a year. Whatever happens, we cannot buy any players unless the ban gets rescinded.
And yet, City
we have lost
avoided that.
Yeah, yeah. They? Later, we have lost our best and one of only two world class players. We are doing what we've wanted for a long time, seeing some of our talented youth players get a chance. That is important. Not whether Sky Flaming News or whoever. Wants to generate a story by pretending that Frank Lampard might get sacked if we lose to Leicester at home on Sunday.
I told you that about that wonderful tweet during the week. Where
that's a good rant,
where very good. And,
yeah. as a, you didn't applaud.
An
you normally do.
No, I normally... Inwardly, I was cheering. that wonderful tweet where this I was about the third or fourth person who had tweeted it on in disbelief, had said, Frank Lampard might be after the following four players... And just chose four players from Europe. Never heard of
the
some
band,
of them.
The band yeah, or, the, yeah, or the continent? It might as well have been either.
It must have been either. And then said, if he actually buys these players, I want him out. And then he put hashtag Lampard out.
Yeah, but you've got to stop getting taken in by this.
But I'm not taken
no,
in.
No,
I'm
I know just, you're not.
I'm utterly
I'm,
bemused
I know you're
by
not.
The idiocy.
But this is the point. We were talking about this before we went on air, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it, we touched on it on the show when Carrie was on, about the awful racism of Tammy Abraham.
Oh,
this is symptomatic of the same issue. People with, frankly, I think, psychopathological disorders, having been given access to a computer, a phone, and or a Twitter account, which should be basically should be in a padded cell. Because they just want a load of attention. They say the most abysmal and appalling things that nobody would say to anybody if they were sitting here in front of you and me, for example. And it should be given the attention that it deserves, which is less than zero.
I agree. And do you know what? I said earlier, it's not actually even that funny anymore.
No.
It's actually a bit stupid. And I have to say, and this isn't specifically about Chelsea.
It's vile as well on a lot of occasions.
But I've seen... In the past week or since the new football season has started, it seems like the Twitter sphere has plummeted to even worse depths than it was already into. And what we're starting to see now is clubs, official club accounts joining in that.
Yeah,
be it
trolling.
The smallest passage of play, be it a tiny little thing that a player did, like shrugging someone off the ball, that you don't really need to highlight. Yes, we can see what's happening. The most minute incident in a game is getting captured, put on social media with a stupid little line from whoever it is that's controlling these social media accounts, and then everybody weighs into this stupid little debate. And I just think clubs need to take more responsibility about what they're putting out there and what they're feeding into the world. United put one out, and United's media department have always been really good, but in recent years, you're starting to think, what is going on? They did a tweet on Harry Maguire, and it just put, simply, the man is a colossus. Why are you putting that out there as Manchester United?
Because, Matt, like at Chelsea, who have been thrilling since 1905, apparently, there are too many...
That was on the stands.
There are too many...
People have put that up.
There are too many ridiculous, stupid, unknowledgeable, bloody young marketing people at football clubs who think... That is, their job is to kind of come up with these really great, groovy ideas. Shut up! Nobody wants to know!
Okay, we do apologise if you heard a word that maybe, I don't know, you shouldn't really be saying on radio.
My complaint, similarly about this guy who tweeted that if Frank happened to get these players, I would like him out, Lampard out, was the number of gullible people who then responded by saying, oh my God,
know,
he wants to buy
just
these players,
ignore
I agree,
it, I
Lampard out, omitting to look at the original tweet, so it just went on and on, and you're thinking,
how many thousands of people have got involved in this ridiculously fabricated argument?
The point is that there is one consoling thing about this, which I think, you know, close to our hearts as Chelsea supporters, that was proven beyond any reasonable doubt this season, that the opinions of idiots on Twitter who purport to be Chelsea fans have absolutely no influence over what happens at the club. In fact, you see that chair over there? It has more influence over what happens at Chelsea Football Club than any of these idiots who post this absolute errant nonsense. The only thing that really matters are the 38,000 people who turn up every week, every other week, who have a season ticket, and the 2,000 to 3,000 who go away every game. I think the club... Hey, thank you.
There you go, Chich. We wanted applause.
I've never heard Max do that. I'm finally, it's like winning the gold. You remember the golden shot? I feel like I've just hit the bull.
I am going to, and I'm enjoying this, Chich, because we live for passion.
You wound me up, mate. You've done very well.
Without passion, no one's interested. I started with, see, it worked. See what I tried to do with those little stats at the beginning? I knew it was going to happen.
Chich, you get in there.
Go on, Jonathan, please.
Can I ask you, therefore, when the...
Golden shot, got an apple on my head.
He's got an apple on his head. He has had everybody at home. He has, indeed, listener at home. It's put me off now. And Chis has done a funny face. If Frank then makes an announcement that he doesn't want the 200 goals scored with the word that we're not allowed to mention, and that he would rather that wasn't sung at the ground, and that results in large numbers of people saying, I don't want to go to the ground club anymore. The club is just becoming tourist and middle class.
I think that's a different issue.
In what way is that a different issue? Because it's still on social media and it's still people responding, and it's people that you would think would know better, but they. It's almost as if that becomes a sociological thing.
I think it's a very different thing. I mean, for example, you know, Lampard, I didn't see it today, I'll be honest, but clearly you must have been asked in the press conference because I saw it on the Sky News ticker up there, but coming out with a vehement attack on quite rightly, on the abuse of Tammy Abraham.
Now, people are asking for a 9-minute Tammy Abraham.
Whatever, you know. Again, if it floats your boat, fine, but that's not the point. The point is, of course, the club do have to respond. You can't just say, like I have, well, it's nonsense and we're just going to give it the contempt it deserves. They have to give a response, particularly when you're talking about something like racism, because you just have to give a response. It's good PR to do that, or not good PR, but they have to manage that situation by giving a response. I'm in a different position. I can say, give it the contempt it deserves, ignore it. It's the basically idiots who are doing it.
But isn't this particular word racist, though, that's being sung in the songs?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, they will have to come and say that. You know, 5-10 years ago, people wouldn't have balked at that. We're living in a different world now. Right. It is deemed unacceptable. Well, if that's how it is, that's how it is. So you shouldn't say it. Of course the club are going to get behind that because they can't be seen to be doing anything else. And they wheel out Frank because, of course, of his West Ham connections, where obviously this song is, directed at.
And it's about him.
Yeah, you know, so exactly. So, of course, they have to do that. But I don't think you can equate that with what I was saying beforehand, which is, you know, basically the supporters in the stadium are a very different breed from some of the idiots we get on social media.
Yeah, well, some of the supporters in the stadium, unfortunately, are those who are saying...
And I look forward to your Venn diagram on it next week.
Funnily enough, I'll just draw a couple of boxes.
I have to say, Jonathan, as well, the 9-minute Tammy Abraham song, so that's what the suggestion has been, a 9-minute Tammy Abraham song. Again, lovely, raises awareness, but Kick It Out will be the first to say that's all very well, but... First and foremost, action needs to be taken. And John Barnes would also, obviously, he said loads of things like, you can stop people coming to games, but what's that doing? It doesn't mean anything.
But Matt, just to clarify this, I don't think there was nobody at the stadium saying that on Wednesday night. There will be nobody in the stadium who will racially abuse one of their own players, particularly Tammy Abraham. This is a social media issue. Mm-hmm. That needs to be made very clear.
Yeah, it's just 33,000 people singing.
Different,
you know, for him is nice.
I didn't mean the other reference. I thought you were going back to the
There are 33,000 people don't sing that. It's a small number who sing that.
Good stuff, chaps. A heated debate, that's what we like on the Chelsea Fan Show. Right, for the final 15 minutes we're going to lighten the mood slightly and look ahead to the weekend's game again on the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
Fan Show on Love Sport. We've got about 10 minutes left with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast. And to kick things off, ahead of Leicester's 500th Premier League game this weekend, ahead of Frank Lampard's first game as manager, walking out at Stamford Bridge, Premier League manager, I should say, for Chelsea. Gigi has a question.
I do, well, because it's very appropriate that you should be talking about stats, Matt, because this is from our old mate Chelsea Chadder, at Chelsea Chadder on Twitter, who, of course, is the unofficial official stats man of the Chelsea Fancast. But Chad likes to pose a question for us a lot. And, of course, sorry, Chad, I forgot to mention it earlier on with all the excitement of having Kerry in the studio. But Chad asks, how many managers did Frank Lampard play under at Chelsea? I'm going to get these two boys to write them all down and we'll reveal it before the end of the show, which is about 8 minutes away.
8 minutes away, absolutely. Now, before we get there, we have had a heated show thus far and I have...
It's because the aircon's broken.
And I've kind of... Yeah, it is. It's typical. Same thing's happening again. You're sweating.
I am. You should have seen me at the Killing Joke gig last Saturday. That was real sweat.
I've poked you a bit throughout
show. Don't mind that.
Chidge. I'm going to do it again.
Okay.
Just quickly. Now, a couple of quotes. I don't know whether you saw them from Chris Sutton this week. So we've had a Chelsea legend in the show in Kerry Dixon this week, and someone who perhaps wasn't as emphatic at Chelsea was Mr. Sutton. And after that United defeat, fair enough, this is to say before the Liverpool game that he made these quotes, but he said, it's like going into an Olympic rowing final and being asked to compete in a dinghy and you've lost your Steve Redgrave. The fans being behind Lampard will only last for so long.
Yep, you see, you know, Chris Sutton is a certified idiot. I know Chris Sutton's type. I used to work in television as a producer and director, mainly making football programmes, and we used to have to hire ex-players who were desperate to get into the media. And we used to brief them that they had to be controversial, otherwise they wouldn't last very long.
Burley is another one.
I could name 50, probably, of ex-footballers who come out and say the most errant, uneducated nonsense.
Savage started off like that.
Again, so that they get people to watch and press their buttons and wind them up. I would take whatever Chris Sutton says about as seriously as his attempts at being a class striker at Chelsea.
But he's known for that. I mean, particularly on... I don't know how I ended up watching it. He was commenting on a Scottish game, Hearts against somebody or other, and he was just having a go at the other pundits. So
yes, that was Alex Ray, I think it was, yeah, wasn't it? The ex-Rangers player.
Yeah, absolutely. So... But I have to say, weirdly, I like him as a pundit because you know what you're going to get. You know that he's
an idiot.
Not an idiot. He will say something that is, you go, oh, for goodness sake, don't be ridiculous.
Idiot.
A big idiot. All right, yeah, a large idiot. And he was good for Celtic. He played well for Celtic.
Yeah, that's
he was
level.
Good for Norwich. He was good for Blackburn.
He was better
absolutely
as a central defender, mate.
Atrocious. Yeah,
falling.
Chelsea.
Rubbish.
Atrocious.
Scored in the 5-0 against Man United, of course.
Once.
That's how, I mean, I would not be proud of that as a
Massimo Taibbi, of course, playing in that game for
course,
Manchester United.
Oh, of course, the legend that has, yeah, there we go.
Ian Wright, on the other hand, has been quite objective, and he said, look, we can't judge Chelsea until Rudiger comes back, until Conte's fully fit, until Pulisic is up and running, which is a fair statement.
Until Cheek's back.
That's because Ian Wright is a highly intelligent man and a great broadcaster. And also won't be told by some idiot, you know, 25-something producer what he has to say to try and get more people to watch the programme. Ian Wright is as honest as the day is long. The only thing I don't like about Ian Wright is when I phoned up his radio show once, having been asked to, he compared me to Piers Morgan. He said I was a Chelsea version of Piers Morgan, for which I have never forgiven him.
Oh, ouch.
But that aside, I liked him as a player. I like him even more as a pundit. I think he talks a lot of sense. And there he goes. He's just proved it, because all of that makes total sense and I agree with.
I've got to say, we have had a response to your question, Chidgey.
Whoa.
Yeah, from Eddie McCready.
Oh, well, Mark, well, it's a good time to reveal the answer, actually.
Okay.
You read them out and I'll say yes or no.
He's not given the full name. He's just given the amount and then named a couple of other people. Shall I read out his answer?
Go on.
So Eddie has said 13 managers.
Wow.
If Ray Wilkins and Steve Holland are included.
Oh, that's what
included.
I've got. I've got them as well,
there you go,
Roland.
Kiddo. Right,
yeah,
go on then, kiddo.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit of a steward's inquiry on that. I am prepared to possibly accept that. I don't know. I haven't got Steve Holland on my list, but the weird thing is I have got other managers on that list who came in on a caretaker capacity.
Okay, Jonathan Kidd.
I'm not so sure that Steve Holland did actually. But there you go.
He was manager briefly, but was that just after Lampard had left?
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
because
Chad
wouldn't get that wrong.
I haven't got the... We counted Mourinho twice, but he wasn't in the second Mourinho
team. You tell
team,
me who you've got. Tell me who you've got. Yes.
Ranieri.
Yes.
Villas-Boas.
Yes.
Grant.
Yes.
Hiddink.
Yes.
And I've got Holland and Wilkins and Mourinho, obviously.
Mourinho, yes.
But
missing a few.
And I'm missing three, actually.
Di Matteo?
No. Yes.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes,
of course.
Yes, yes. Sorry.
Of course, Di Matteo, for God's sake, Jonathan. God.
Come on.
No, I can't.
On, you said Ray Wilkins. He's also.
And I've
on
said
the
Wilkins and
one
Holland.
One game.
There's one game that was.
There's one more.
Watford, wasn't it? Watford.
Yeah. 4-0.
Yeah.
Max has given us one. Won the Europa League final with Chelsea.
Benitez, of course. Sorry.
One more. Double.
Hoddle?
No.
Carlo Ancelotti.
What? Ancelotti? What am I doing? What's the matter with me?
I don't know, mate.
What's happened to my mind?
Past your bedtime,
what
clearly.
What on earth? The three... Oh,
yeah, there you go.
Me.
Well done, Chadder. Sorry, Mark or Eddie McCready, 1977. Steve Holland, or Steve Holland, if you prefer, is a steward's inquiry.
I'm sure we might be hearing from him. Get in touch with us. Let us know on that one.
God, that was so appalling. Benitez, Di Matteo and Ancelotti. Missed those three out.
Okay, chaps, right, moving on from kiddos' tears. We're going to quickly just go back. We've got about 5 minutes, so we're going to talk about the game and the fact that this is the first home game of the Premier League
Massive,
season. The first home
brilliant.
Game in charge for Frank Lampard. It is special, isn't it?
Do you know what, Matt? There is nothing like the first home game of the season if you go regularly. And I'm lucky enough to be in a season ticket holder for over 20 years. And it's like going back to school, the first day of the new school term after your summer holiday break. And you get to see, in our case, mates that you might not have seen really since the last game of the season. You go back to pubs that you might not have seen since the last game of the season. The smell of it, the atmosphere, the bonhomie, the grin on my face on Sunday will be massive until 4:30.
Actually, on that, I'd love to ask you this, because it is very different in the Premier League to the Football League. And we have the Brentford fan show on, and we spoke to the guys last Monday, and it was really interesting to hear their views ahead of going hosting Cambridge, so they're hosting Cambridge. They've got a really good relationship with the guys from Middlesbrough who they played last week at the Riverside. And they've got communities around the country, these Brentford fans, and before games, they meet up with opposition supporters and they sit and they have a pint and they chat and they discuss, and after the game, they talk. You don't get that really in the Premier League. Have you got that with any clubs where you know fans of opposition?
No, Jonathan will answer very interestingly in a second, I think. But there are, no, not as a whole, not as a group. Apparently, back in the day, so I'm told, that we used to give Liverpool their own pub and they were about the only club. This is back in the day when hooliganism was rife. And I don't think there were many clubs that we did that with. I have occasionally, there's one or two mates that I've got who are like really into football, proper football fans, who go away. So, you know, that makes them even more proper in my book, who I will meet up with a pint. But usually after the game. I don't know. Actually, I used to meet him quite often before as well. You know, there are a few mates that I will do that with, but not a whole group. And of course, you have a very different experience, don't you? Well, you do, because I don't think you kind of, you know, how do I put this? Because you sit where you are, you often have a spare ticket and you often invite a mate who's an opposition fan.
I'll do that. Yeah. But they have to.
It's a very different experience, though, isn't it?
I suppose they're on their best behaviour.
Well, they're not going to muck around.
No, they're not.
But you get fed and all that.
Other than the mate of mine who I normally sit with, who said, my West Ham fan friend is coming along. Could you look after him?
Yeah.
And he said, I've told him not to wear his colours or do anything. And he within 30 seconds, he stood up, abused everybody in the area, had a go at the manager, who was just down below us, and funnily enough, was escorted off the premises. And
my mate
phoned me at half-time and said, how's Phil doing? I said, Phil was dejected after about a minute.
Oh,
and he went,
brilliant.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
I said, I thought I told you to keep an eye on him. I said, it doesn't make any difference.
Wasn't Phil Jupiter's, was it?
No, it wasn't. We're finished.
We're chaps. I'm afraid we come to the end of the show.
Prediction.
We'll do that next week.
2-1. 2-1, Matt.
2-1 to Chelsea. Kiddo.
3-1.
3-1. Tommy Abraham off the score sheet.
Hopefully, yeah. Needs to get off the mark.
Right, it's the Chelsea Fan Show. We're going to be back at the same time next week, 7 p.m. every Friday. But first, Frank Lampard in his first home game as Chelsea manager takes on Leicester City on Sunday at 4:30 p.m. We'll give you all the reaction from that same time next week.
This is Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.